This is Christian Robillard, and you're listening to Beyond the Bake Sale, where we help you raise more time, talent, and treasure in innovative, creative, and effective ways for the causes you care about. On this episode, I spoke with David Kravinchuk. David believes philanthropy's power belongs to all, not just the 1%. Working with clients across Canada and internationally, he develops and executes successful strategies for annual giving and legacy marketing programs that build value through meaningful donor relationships and empower donors of modest means to achieve their philanthropic dreams. David is the founder of Western Canada Fundraising Conference, Canada's only multi-award winning conference for professional fundraisers. In our conversation, David and I spoke about legacy marketing fundamentals, choosing the right story, not talking about death, and getting your website legacy ready. So I hope you enjoy this episode. David, welcome to the show. It's wonderful to have you.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity. I'm really excited to sit down and talk to you today about legacy giving and fundraising in general.
As most of our guests get thrown through the gambit, David, wanted to start, much like our other guests, in terms of understanding a bit more around your background, and wanted to ask you a question kind of around your origin story, and throwing it out as, if you were to think about your life and your career as like a superhero origin story, maybe like a comic origin reel, like 5 to 12 panels of some like major events, happenings within your life, knowing that there's no way that could capture absolutely everything. But if you think about it in like 5 to 12 panels, roughly speaking, what would that superhero origin comic panel look like?
Yeah. I think the first panel was probably figuring out how much I really enjoyed hosting, creating, managing events, and working with not-for-profit organizations around making their events successful. When I had my own art gallery and event space back when I was in my 20s. And that transitioned into working in events for the MS Society of Canada in a much different kind of event structure than I had originally thought of when I thought of events. But that was my first kind of paid fundraising role. And from there, realized how much I loved working with individual donors of modest means. You know, those kind of community-based donors, those mom and pop donors, the 99% donors. And moved that kind of interest into working in annual giving at the University of Alberta, which really taught me some of the basics of you know, how to connect with people using mass communication tools like mail and that sort of thing. And then the next shift, the next panel would probably be when I discovered all the amazing work that the folks at what is now GoodWorks were doing. Back then it was FLA Group, and they had really been doing a lot of research around the intersection of legacy giving and direct mail, and wrote a book called Iceberg Philanthropy. And that was one of my major aha fundraiser, professional fundraiser moments. And that led to me working with them for a good chunk of time, and then eventually to kind of combine all of that and my love of entrepreneurship into my own agency. So that's probably my latest panel, and last panel for now.
For now, I think that's the key word. And you also have Western Canada Fundraising Conference, right?
That's right. So that came out of so the conference happens every year in Western Canada. It's supposed to be happening in about just over 2 weeks from now. We've postponed it until mid-September. So our fingers are crossed that the world will look like a little bit more like it used to, and that we'll be able to gather our community, our family, really, in Western Canada again. And so super passionate about fundraising, professional development, and being able to facilitate that with amazing people that we are so fortunate to have in our network, and really trying to bring that to areas of the country that aren't blessed with kind of a regular high quality conference. And so that's why we started in Western Canada 5 years ago, and why we're not going to quit no matter what COVID-19 throws at us.
I love it. And one of the highlights that we were chatting with a former guest of ours, Sam LaPrade, about that conference in particular, who we're both very familiar with Sam's amazing work, was the fundraising confessional. And I think in our heads, we've been trying to also think about, you know, we had joked about how when we first met, you were thinking about how to rip off, quote unquote, using air quotes, the crude sign that we had at our booth. We've been thinking about things around like the fundraising confessional and how we could make that a recurring thing. Was wondering, David, in your years of planning this conference and even planning events, but maybe through the specific lens of this conference, are there like fun, you know, get to know you type activities or activations or just like community building type activities that you have really enjoyed doing?
Yeah, you know, I think and maybe it says something deep that I shouldn't reveal about myself, but my favorite thing to hear from a professional, especially a colleague, is, you know, what was your biggest screw up? What was the, you know, kind of the worst career F up that you've ever had? And tell us about it in depth. And, you know, tell us the most embarrassing thing you possibly can. And those kinds of sessions, to be honest, I think are always super popular. Everyone wants to hear about that, to learn that, you know, especially somebody who they might look to for expertise or knowledge or as a bit of a guru, to know that they're just like making dumb mistakes just like we all do, and what those key learnings are. That's my favorite thing to do, and Sam definitely brought it up when she talked about confessional, because that's what all of us did that day.
And I think it speaks to the leadership of any conference or just the leadership of the sector, that you have those people who are willing to come forward and show a bit of their scars, their war wounds, if they would, because that's ultimately what makes them such a great professional, is not is both the things that they have been successful at, but also the things they will never repeat, because they have clearly learned and gotten there, whether it's slaps on the wrist or scars or bruises or, you know, war stories to tell out of it.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing. And I think it's about the way I learn the most, right? You know, you learn the most from your mistakes, at least I do. And you learn those lessons fast and deeply. So
absolutely. Is there one, whether about yourself that you shared or others that you've heard through that conference or even outside of it, that has really like stuck out to you, whether it's around the lesson that it portrayed or just the gravity of the, not the mistake, but of the learning opportunity and then their ability to rebound from that, or really any criteria that you might use to qualify which one was particularly interesting or memorable for yourself?
Yeah. You know, maybe a couple. One of my friends and a colleague of mine shared something quite personal during our fundraising confessional at WCFC last year. And, you know, it's somebody that I know fairly well and didn't realize that they had, you know, been having some, you know, personal kind of struggles, mental health concerns around the pace of work and what's demanded of fundraisers. And so that was really memorable to me, somebody who I had, you know, not really thought of as being kind of vulnerable to something like that. And somebody who was willing to kind of put it out there for people. And then, you know, my kind of silly, cheesy one is always, you know, how I cost one of my employers millions of dollars by, you know, thinking I was being very clever and simplifying a giving system and removing some very important information from a giving that ended up potentially costing them millions of dollars before realizing what a terrible mistake that was.
would you care to share a little bit more about that one?
Sure, I feel terrible because it's my like my go-to. So it's not new content for anyone that's listening to my story. I'll try and give you the Coles Notes version of it. Basically, when I was at the University of Alberta, I was working in the annual giving office, and at the time I was the direct mail coordinator before I went on to manage the office, and this very complicated giving form for our annual giving donors for reasons that I can't go into really at this point without getting way off track.
Yeah.
But it was very complicated. One of the little complications of it is that we have this box at the bottom where we ask people to tick off if they would like more information about certain planned giving vehicles. Leaving a gift in your will, leaving a gift of real property, et cetera, all these other planned giving terms that personally I don't really know that much about because I'm not a planned giving guy. So I just thought, you know, here's one more chunk of this terrible ordeal of a reply coupon that we could just eliminate and our donors will be so thankful and let's just take it right off. So we did. And without thinking anything more of it until almost a year later, my colleague, the director of planned giving at the time, Marilyn, came to me and said, you know, have you guys stopped mailing donors this year? I was like, no, we have not stopped mailing donors. We are still mailing more than ever, in fact. And in the interim, three major mailings had gone out to about 30 or 40,000 donors per mailing. And Marilyn said, I'm asking because we have not received any of the reply coupons back. And I said, that's interesting. Why would you get a reply coupon? And she said, when somebody ticks off these little boxes at the bottom, they get filtered back to us. And our planned giving officers call, contact the donor and we go from there. And I said, And she said, yeah, and most of them are bequests, and we usually get about 12 per mailing, sometimes 15, sometimes 10, but yeah, around 12. So the fact that each one of those contacts usually led to a conversation about a gift and a will or a bequest from most donors, we sat down and calculated the millions of dollars that potentially cost, because the average bequest to the U of A at that time was about $110,000. And, you know, multiply that by 12 times three mailings times the fact that we probably would have inspired another dozen or so people to also consider it if they read it on that form. It was millions. So promptly we put it back up.
And I think, and hopefully that's a bit of the inspiration for how you got so fascinated, or you found so much emphasis to place on legacy marketing and legacy giving programs, which seems like a perfect, if not totally unplanned, segue into some of the questions that we have today around legacy marketing and legacy giving programs and things of that nature. So either you are a master at setting those things up, or I'm just that excellent of an interviewer. It's hard. We won't say for sure until the recording stops, but
equally both of those.
Yeah. Things. I like that. You get to come back for a second episode now, David. But one of the things in preparing for our conversation around legacy marketing, and one of the things that I found particularly interesting from your guys' website was around the line, helping your name be next to the kids and the cats and the whale, your name being the charity's name, which I thought in terms of the alliteration and just, you know, what we talk about in the sector, just seemed really clever. And wanted to start with, How do charities, whether it's especially during this time or in general, how do they start kind of going about that in your opinion?
Right. Well, it's all about the relationship, and it's, you know, you're certainly not going to inspire a donor to write your name in the will next to the kids and the cats if you don't have a deep relationship with them. And it's not going to happen. You're not going to build that relationship by putting a bunch of coda seals and how-to information on writing wills on your website. If that's where your legacy pages are, we need to quickly reorient toward, you know, building that relationship with the donor and inspiring them, showing them about, talking to them about the shared values that you have, your organization and your donor, and how those align, and how your donor can ensure that those values continue in the future.
And when it comes to some of those values, even or trying to create those connections in some of our pre-talk, you had mentioned that COVID-19 in particular has highlighted some of those pieces, and you were mentioning some pieces around Dr. Russell James and some of his work with legacy marketing, legacy giving, planned giving, that kind of whole gambit or set of practices. Can you talk a little bit about what Dr. Russell James talks about and that reference around that inspiration and some of the other pieces?
Right. So for anyone who doesn't know Dr. Russell James, he's done this amazing research at the University of Texas where he's literally sticking individual donors inside MRIs and saying legacy giving phrases and words to them and checking out which areas of their brain light up, and also taking different approaches in fundraising communications and sharing those with donors. And again, seeing where we're getting people really excited. So that's kind of the background of his work. And he's been doing that for a number of years. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. And also so super useful for all of us legacy marketing people. In every charity, honestly, out in the world right now. So what we know is, if we talk about death, if we even mention death, it shuts down, you know, the donor's brain immediately about being receptive to anything else that you want to talk about. Humans are hardwired not to be interested in hearing anyone talk after they bring up that topic. We don't want to think about our own mortality. What we do want to think about is, and what he's discovered and underlined, is that we want to think about kind of our own personal autobiography and how we're going to write our own autobiography. And by that, you know, we also have discovered through his research and others that we basically want to see ourselves as the good guy, right? We want to see ourselves as good people. And we usually think about ourselves in that context. And we're usually attracted to doing things that give us more of that kind of recognition. So when we look back over our lives, we want to think about those moments or those times where we feel good about, you know, what's important to us, what it is to be a good person, all of those things. So legacy marketing really fits into that, to talk about, you know, the power of your gift and what it will be able to accomplish, and how it aligns with the values that are important to you, and how even you can be admired, right? People will admire you, your family will admire you for these kinds of things, which what is all true. It also helps us deal with some of the objections or concerns donors might have about making gifts in their wills to charity.
And I have a lot of questions around that piece, but wanted to start with the whole inspiring people, not through obviously death and talking about that, but having that articulation around shared values, around being the good guy in the story. What would be, or what are some practical examples of some groups out there, or of examples that you know of some charities or nonprofits doing that especially well, and kind of some of the component parts that fit into that success? Maybe one or two examples, if you have any.
You know, I think some of the usual suspects that are really good at fundraising and really good at kind of community-based individual donors fundraising are also very good at this stuff. So, you know, Amnesty International is really quite fantastic at this. If you look at their website, you can see how they've set up a whole legacy giving section on their website that goes through some of these major touch points with people to connect with them, inspire them. They also put together a pretty solid a booklet around legacy giving. You know, that takes you from everywhere from the founder of the organization through to testimonials from donors who are just like you, right? That's a very key thing to do. And then also talks a bit about, you know, what the future will look like thanks to your gift. They do a very good job. The World Wildlife Federation does quite a good job as well. UNICEF, particularly in the UK, they've done some very good things around legacy marketing. But it's not just the big guys or just the huge international organizations that can kind of, you know, work with each other's resources. I'm going to shamelessly plug one of our clients, Luther College High School in Regina, has put together like a really solid idea of connecting with their donors around legacy giving. We did some work with them on a legacy booklet that you can actually get on their website as a PDF. So if you want to go check them out, they're in Regina, you just Google them, or we can put a link. That kind of sums up, in fact, the work that we did with them almost sums up kind of our approach to how we work with inspiring donors and connecting them to the work that the organization does.
I like it. And in terms of I guess, because you want to be able to initiate that conversation in some way, I imagine, through whether it's through multiple touch points or one starting off, or if you had someone approach you. But in your advice, David, what would be some steps or even some questions to start to ask your donors to get them in that mindset of potentially making some type of legacy gift? And perhaps what form should those questions come in, whether it's through a certain type of marketing collateral or like you're talking about with a website? I guess walk us through a little bit around that if you can.
Yeah. So I think there's three pretty powerful tools that you can put to work right away if you're starting a legacy marketing program. And they don't cost a ton. And with a good amount of research and some time devoted, you can probably get 80% of the way there using your internal resources if you're able to devote them specifically to this. So it doesn't need to be expensive or onerous. And certainly there's a bunch of us out here that are able to help if you have don't have the time and you need the help. So let's start with, I think one of the standard things that we've been doing for many, many years and still is very effective is a legacy marketing survey out to donors. Obviously, it's something that we want to kind of target our donors with. So typically, you know, we want to look at donors who are a little bit more loyal, who've been with the organization for a long time, not necessarily giving a huge amount. And not necessarily every year, but have given multiple gifts over the year. So that's kind of where we'd start to target. And legacy marketing survey sounds maybe a little fancy. Honestly, it can be very simple. It's almost like a push-pull survey. So we want to kind of plant the seed about the idea of leaving a gift in your will. We'd like to ask donors, do they think this is a good idea? You know, is it something they're interested in? And, you know, would they consider leaving a gift to our organization, or have they already done so? Those are kind of the three main things that I would ask. And then I like to do a little bit more on if we can explore a little bit more about them. You know, what's their favorite memory, or what's most important to them about the organization? And one of my favorite questions to ask in any donor survey, whether it's for legacy or not, is ask them to rank how they feel about your charity. So, you know, among their favorites, are you the top, the very favorite charity? You know, are you in the top five, or are you just one of many that you will like? That's a great way to also find out, you know, who maybe should get that follow-up call versus maybe who will just get the next piece in the mail. That's the first place I'd start. The next place I'd start is gathering some stories from donors who have arranged a gift in your will. If possible, from the surviving loved ones of someone who has left a bequest for you. And with the eye that you'll create a bit of a story bank, but also you can start putting, sharing some of those stories immediately on your website. And then the third area is, I like to put together a very inspirational, what we call a Bequest Inspiration booklet, a legacy marketing brochure booklet. We have a very kind of specific way we do ours, but many charities have them. Unfortunately, most of the ones that are out there were written from the perspective of like a financial planner or a lawyer or your planned giving volunteer committee that are made up of allied professionals and are very low on the inspiration side of things, right? So instead, we want to flip that on its head. When we do ours with clients, we allow them one page to do the business stuff and we get the other 11, right? So it really should be that kind of ratio, very much focused on writing inspirationally, if that's even a word, writing compelling inspirational copy where the donor really feels close to the organization and feels their themselves reflected in the organization.
Mm-hmm. And with regards to those stories, David, when you're collecting them, I imagine that you're wanting to have, to a certain degree, uniformity in that they include similar elements that make for a compelling and inspiring story, but at the same time with everyone's unique spin, obviously. Are there elements that you would recommend that charities ask to include in those stories, almost like a template, if you would, while recognizing that your donors are going to write their story or share certain parts of it? So as they're like, you know, these are the five elements of a compelling legacy, like a compelling legacy story to share with others to demonstrate why others should leave some type of gift in their wills.
Yeah. So first, you know, it's very important that we select the right person to use as our testimonial, right? To give that testimonial. And we really want to select a person who story an average person can relate to, right? This is when I say, you know, like, let's look for the bus drivers and the teachers, not the car dealership owner or the property developer, right? Let's find people like my Aunt Mary or my dad. We want somebody to recognize themselves in these stories. And so when you do speak with them, we want to draw out and then write in their story later, you know, a little bit about that background, about what they did for a living, how they maybe became connected to the organization, what's important to them, so that your reader, so that your donor feels simpatico with them. So that's really critical. And then the other part, another part that we want to draw out and go into a little bit deeper is about the values of what is important to them about the work that the charity does and what did they hope that their gift will accomplish in the future. You know, if you're you're doing something, say, for a cancer organization, its goal is to have your donor say, you know, I want to see a future that, you know, where we're not afraid of cancer, and I want to make sure that my money goes to research or you know, helping somebody get to their appointment or whatever is important to them, right, about that organization. And then I think we want to really highlight how it made the donor feel. We want the donor to you know, tell us about the fact that this was an experience that was so positive to them. You know, when they made that arrangement, when at their last meeting with their lawyer, that they left feeling great, a sense of accomplishment, maybe even so that the potential bequest donor can really start to go, oh, you know, I want to feel that way, right? And I can see how I would, because, you know, that is a great way to help this charity.
And I think that piece around, is this me, that relatable element is such an important one. I think that's one that often we look to We look to the people who are giving these massive gifts as those inspirational models of philanthropy. But when we see others who are within our own means, who are giving and actually stepping up to do something, I think it can probably trigger those thoughts in our head to say, you know what, this is actually accessible for me as a donor, that I could be in this person's shoes. And oh, they gave through their will or through some type of insurance policy or something like that. That is something that's within my means. And in fact, that would make me feel really great and would be a nice legacy, not just for people to remember myself, but for my family to see as an act of philanthropy.
Right, right. Yeah. And speaking of family, we also want to, if we can, you know, take some of the opportunity to deal with any objections that might be out there, some of the common donor concerns. And so, you know, if given the opportunity, I like to ask the person about, you know, whether they shared this decision with their family, you know, or, you know, if they had an opportunity to think about, you know, this being something that once their family is taken care of, you know, it's nice to know that charity XYZ will also, you know, receive a portion of my estate or something like that. And, you know, really that it's around a family decision. We also want to make sure that we are really respectful around the fact that, you know, this was a decision, show that this was a decision that the donor made. They took time to consider it. Under their own volition, you know, decided to make these things after thinking about it, and went on their own to their professional advisor, a lawyer or financial planner, to organize the details. So, you know, we really want to make sure that donors don't get a sense that this is somehow being directed by the charity, or that the charity will in any way be able to do that or want to do that.
And then what's the appropriate balance in terms of involving family members? Because I can imagine there could be different parts to it, and feel free to correct me if I'm incorrect. But I imagine like we just talked about, that it's important to involve the family, and that they know what's happening, that they're on board and supportive of this. But at the same time, you know, it's also that person's resources, and it's that person's choice of where they want to leave their resources to. So in your mind, David, or in your experience, or hearing different examples of this either gone, you know, terrifically right or horribly wrong, what's the balance there?
Yeah, while it's important, an important element, first of all, it has to be, obviously it has to be true. It has to be something that we have a conversation with the donor about before we do any of the writing. And it's usually pretty light, you know, it's pretty light mention. I don't want to say breezy, but we don't spend a lot of time on it, but we want to make sure that we put a mention in there if it's true that, you know, oh, they had a conversation with their family, or, you know, I discussed it with my partner and they were like, yeah, go for it. Of course, it's you know, you love those guys, or whatever the case may be. The other way that's really powerful to demonstrate how family feels about this is if you have an opportunity to speak to surviving loved ones of somebody who's left a bequest. And that's a testimonial that I always try and obtain and highlight in the work that we do with our clients, because, and so do most legacy marketers. It's just so powerful for a prospective bequest donor to hear about, you know, say a son or daughter, a partner or a sibling say something like, you know, oh, and when we found out that they left a gift in their will to their favorite charity, you know, we felt so great knowing that, you know, this is exactly the kind of person they were. We knew how important this charity was to them, or this cause was to them. And it's, you know, it's just exactly like Jane, right? This is exactly how she lived her life. And we were happy, maybe even proud might be, you know, the kinds of things that come out. And in general, that's how a lot of family members do feel, right? So we want to make sure that donors don't feel like there will be instantly some sort of animosity about the fact that they gave a portion of their gift or their estate to a charity.
Create a new normal, I think is the word that a lot of people are using. Are there new normal elements of legacy marketing and legacy giving that professionals should take note of in terms of how things may have changed or different nuances that we should apply to our approaches, especially with death tolls and infection rates obviously climbing higher and higher around the world and people's wealth being eaten away by different economic crashes and things like that, David?
Yeah, so great question. I don't know what the new normal is going to look like down the road. So for now, I feel like the most important thing is, obviously, we need to acknowledge that we're living through some very trying times and going through some upheaval and some change when the future is a bit uncertain right now. That said, I mean, I think just like any kind of fundraising, now is not the time for us to hit the brakes. I mean, we've got even more need in our community. We've got even more need to make the world a better place. And so I think it's important. And one of my favorite quotes came that I've been using a lot, came from a recent Canada Helps webinar around COVID-19 fundraising. And I think it was Kathy Mann who said it, let's let our donors decide if they want to make a gift, right? Let's not decide for them. Of course, we want to be respectful to the fact that a lot of people are having serious threats to their health, their life, and their finances. So let's make sure that we're empathetic to that. But I don't think it needs to change really our messaging around bequests. At the end of the day, most of the people that we're wanting to talk to are, older. They skew on the older side. So as far as financial, maybe a little less affected than say a working age person might be if their salaries are affected versus say a retirement fund. And really because we're not talking about also amounts, we never want to talk about amounts when we're doing legacy marketing. So I still think that if we keep the focus on how these gifts, really align with the values of the person, tell the story of that person's life and values, and we work continuing to inspire them around the work that we do and how together we're making the world better, our community better, the causes we care about, advancing the causes we care about. I don't really see a reason to change course right now.
And in terms of, I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of different fundraisers in this space around like communication with your donors, especially during this time, in terms of the frequency and almost to a degree not being able to like over communicate or having just certain messaging going out, just checking on how people are doing. Do you think a similar approach is useful for your legacy giving marketing program around sending out perhaps a few messages exclusively around like, hey, we're just checking to see how you're doing. This is what we're continuing to do in advance of some of those legacy giving materials? Or do you think that maintaining your similar, I guess, schedule or your similar approach is still a good one during this point in time?
Yeah, I mean, I think we want to make sure that what we're sending out doesn't go without context, right? And to make sure that if I'm reading it as a potential bequest donor in sitting in my home, everything's being delivered and I'm going to watch the Prime Minister every day at 11:15 address the nation, how do these four pieces of paper that just arrived in my mailbox fit into that, what that looks like, right? So maybe a little bit of adjustment of your copy to acknowledge where we're at. But at the end of the day, I don't really see that we need to stop necessarily sending out something that's going to inspire a donor to consider the gift. Mm-hmm. At the end, you know, if you're doing a full-on, say, mail series where you're investing in sending, say, you know, 4 or 6 different pieces to somebody over 2 or 3 years, you're really, which is a, you know, kind of the Cadillac backbone of a legacy marketing program, you're really going to be, you're having a long, slow conversation with somebody anyway. Any legacy marketing material you send out really has either no ask or a very soft kind of, you know, asking someone to consider this kind of gift, right? So I think that fits in, I think that still fits in quite well, considering, you know, we're taking into the, you know, all the background of the COVID-19 crisis that we're in right now. Again, I make sure that, you know, we reviewed that copy and that we're acknowledging where we need to. But I think if you're doing it right already, you don't need to be too worried about continuing this conversation.
Yeah. And it sounds like, based on what we just spoke of, it's this type of giving is a little bit more, not insulated, but a little more resilient against the other shocks of what other types of donations might happen, things around, you know, you're letting your donors ultimately decide. It's not something that's overly forceful, if you would. Things around their demographics, around their income is relatively stable at this point in time anyways, as opposed to some other potential donors out there that might have had jobs affected or income affected or investments affected. Things around the focus on how the gifts are aligned naturally with your organization versus something that's more of a timely need. But also that piece around how it's more of a slow burn, and that it's a long relationship planning, and almost when you do ultimately make the ask of making some type of legacy gift, it's almost more of an invitation for a conversation, as opposed to like, this is the formal ask of this amount in your will for us. It's more, what would you like to achieve, you know, once your time here is done on Earth? And here's how we might be able to do that by aligning our two visions or our two set of values that are complementary together.
Yeah, exactly. And we'd probably leave out the phrase around once your time on Earth is done, because we don't want to, know, trigger that shutdown of
absolutely
response. But I mean, even though, you know, some of our legacy pieces will definitely have a direct ask for this gift. You know, we'd like you to, you know, consider this gift now and joining, you know, joining your fellow donors in this, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to say this is an opportunity, but in a way, you know, here's when you have somebody who may be having some current financial difficulty or just certainly a reduced income, whether it's by job or even because of investment income going down, if you have an RRSP that you rely on for your retirement, this is the perfect time that somebody who might not be able to contribute, who's a loyal donor and cares about your cause and isn't able to make that contribution they normally would make this year, or might even have to suspend their monthly gift to you, it's an opportunity for them to still be able to contribute to your cause and still make a very significant gift. So I think it is an opportunity for us to have that that bit of a conversation with people. I would say that's almost like the opportunity to add something into your regular annual giving messaging right now.
Mm-hmm. And that seems like an appropriate nuance around this whole situation of, you might not be able to make a gift at your current level, but here's another option that you can consider. Are there more things in that vein, David, that people should be considering, either specifically around legacy marketing or even generally speaking, that you might want to speak to around some of those nuances, or, you know, not taking advantage of COVID-19, but as you put it, seeing it more as like an opportunity within this challenge?
Yeah. Oh, you know, just recently we were writing an appeal for a client, an annual giving appeal, actually, for a client that's going to go out in May. And the messaging around the actual ask, we are living in the world of COVID-19 and that many, many donors do not have an opportunity, you know, are not able to financially contribute right now. And so we're offering some of those options. And one of the options we did was, you know, making a monthly gift because, you know, it's a much smaller amount and it's a lot easier to kind of manage if you, you know, if you're really watching your budget right now. So that was kind of an opportunity. That's kind of a side, which always, of course, is the more monthly donors you have builds your pool of legacy marketing prospects, because monthly donors are excellent legacy marketing prospects. Some other opportunities around, you know, sending out stewardship pieces. And if you're sending out, say, a newsletter, or even, you know, one of my favorite things to do is send out a stewardship appeal, where you really just write a long thank you letter to somebody, focusing around an individual who was positively affected because of your gift. You know, that's also an opportunity to make mention of these other kinds of options of giving. It's a time to think about, do you want to highlight this? If not already on your reply coupon, make sure you put it on there, you know, and even highlight it around the fact that, you know, during COVID-19, that could be part of your little blurb on your reply coupon. It's also a wonderful thing to make sure that you've got your website organized around legacy giving and inspiring people, and maybe putting a front page story on your website using one of your inspiring legacy donors. Usually those are feel-good stories, and at this time we always need that. So wouldn't you love to come to your favorite charity's website and read a story about a wonderful little old lady who's left a bequest in her will and why she's so passionate about the cause you're passionate about?
Mm-hmm. We're hearing from the teacher or the mailman or the bus driver or someone along those lines who can be that hero of the story in the same way that you might be able to be the hero of that story too.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that, you know, right now we have these heroes that we're so excited about celebrating and who are keeping us safe and saving the world. In fact, I'm gonna totally steal that idea, Christian, because we haven't done that. But yeah, let's find a hero to be a bequest donor testimonial. Let's find that person.
I like it. David, this has been so insightful and helpful. So thank you for spending the time with us and benefiting our listeners so greatly around everything legacy marketing and how things have changed, and sharing some insights from kind of your origin story. Want to throw it over to you. Is there anything that you're currently working on, or ways that people can continue to stay involved with what it is that you and the many projects that you're involved with are doing?
Check out our website, and I think we'll put a link up for the common good. Also, Western Canada Fundraising Conference. We're going to launch a series of educational pieces, including some webinars and some white papers and all that kind of stuff from our Western Canada fundraising community. So those will be available to everyone widely in the coming weeks. So definitely check out our website and our social media feeds if you'd like to see some of those pieces coming from some of our favorite people, like Samuel Pratt and Lynn Boardman and a bunch of us. So yeah, we'll be putting that out and hopefully be some good resources for everyone during COVID and beyond.
I love it. And we'll make sure for sure to link those all in the show notes, as well as any of the coordinates for you personally, in case people would like to be in touch and work together or pick your big brain around any of these topics. So thank you again so much, David. Really do appreciate you taking the time and sharing your wealth of expertise with all of us.
Oh, you're welcome. I love chatting about legacy marketing anytime, and great always having a conversation with you, Christian. I appreciate the chance to talk about it. Have a great day.
And you as well. Stay well, David.
Thanks, you too.
Hey, everyone. Christian here with a few short things before you take off. A big thanks for tuning into another episode of Beyond the Bake Sale. Did you love the episode? Then we'd be grateful for a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. Don't want to miss our next episode? Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Want to collaborate on something? Have a story that you want to tell? Have feedback for us? Then shoot us a message by heading to our website at www.btbs.ca. While you're there, you can follow us on social, read our blog, and also listen to past episodes. But above all, thank you for committing to moving beyond the bake sale.